In late March 1865, a couple of weeks before the Confederate surrender at Appomattox Courthouse in Virginia, a platoon of Union soldiers who had been separated from their regiment plundered their way through Riverdale and the surrounding region, sparking fear and panic among the citizens. Apocryphal tales of widespread looting, burning homes and farms, and terrorizing the citizens have circulated for years, most without documentation. But there is one story, a written account, that comes from a Union officer who tells not of destruction, but the saving of the Lawson farm. Elmer Lawson's great, great, great grandparents, Alexander and Lucy May Lawson, were married in 1859 and had three children when he was called into service in 1863. By all accounts, Alexander Lawson was a hard-working, industrious young man who turned his father's farm into the most productive farm in the area. He and Lucy May were dedicated Christians. They were not in favor of the war. He opposed slavery. But loyalty was a prime virtue. And when the call came in 1863, he turned the operation of the farm over to his capable wife, Lucy May, and he went to fight for his beloved North Carolina. Lucy May didn't know if she could maintain the farm, but with hard work, faith, determination, and a little luck, she kept it going. But by the spring of 1865, she was totally exhausted, and she didn't know if she could make it another season. But there were rumors that the war would soon be over, and if that was true, then Alexander would be home, and that motivated her to work even harder. In early March 1865, she was repairing a fence when her prized milk cow escaped. Milk was a precious commodity. She couldn't afford to be without it. And so she went into the woods searching for the cow, but she was nowhere to be found. She started to panic. How would she tell her children there would be no more milk? She sat down beside a stream and she started to weep, when suddenly she had the sense that she was not alone. She wiped her tears, opened her eyes, and there was a beautiful woman standing in front of her. She was dressed in white, and her face had a radiance that almost glowed. "Who are you?" Lucy May asked. "The question," the woman said, "is who are you?" Lucy May was confused. And then the woman smiled and said, "Lucy May, you are a child of God. God has been with you while your husband has been gone, and he's not about to desert you now. So be strong and of good courage. Fear not." And then she opened her arms and said, "The Lord bless thee and keep thee. The Lord make his face to shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. The Lord lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace." And then she was gone. Lucy May tried to process what just happened. Did it really happen? Was it a dream? Was it a vision? Was it her imagination? And then, over at the place where the woman had been standing, she saw something glistening in the leaves. She walked over and picked it up. It was a silver amulet, and on it the words were inscribed, "The Lord bless thee and keep thee. The Lord make his face shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. The Lord lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace." And just then, she heard her cow lowing. Colonel Aaron Grigsby was with the 79th Indiana Infantry Regiment. His platoon had become separated from the rest of the regiment, but he was still trying to lead his men to Appomattox Courthouse to join forces with General Grant and the rest of the Union Army. But they were without supplies, and his men were hungry and getting desperate. He learned that a few of his men had plundered some of the farms without his knowledge, but he reprimanded them because Colonel Grigsby was an honest, decent, Christian gentleman, and he would not tolerate any unjustified acts of destruction or vengeance. And so he ordered scouts to go out in the region and find the best stocked farms. And when they came back, they said, without a doubt, the best farm in the county is the Lawson farm. Lucy May had heard reports of the Yankee soldiers plundering the other farms, and she sat in her house and held the silver amulet, and she prayed that God would spare her farm. But late that afternoon, she heard horses, and she looked out and saw 30 or 40 Yankee soldiers converging on her house. According to the written account of Colonel Aaron Grigsby, they surrounded the house and ordered the occupants to come out. Just then, a little lady with a shotgun came out of the house with three little children hanging on to her apron strings. Colonel Grigsby took his hat off and said, "Ma'am, we ain't here to do you no harm, but my men are hungry, and you've got livestock, and we need to take them." She lifted up the shotgun, pointed it at the colonel, and screamed, "Get off my farm!" The other soldiers pulled their weapons, but Colonel Grigsby ordered them to stand down. He said, "Ma'am, I don't like this any better than anyone else, but this is war, and my men have to have something to eat, and your livestock are the most valuable commodity that you have. We have to take them." When he said that, Lucy May put the shotgun down, and she said, "No, they ain't. I got something more valuable." And she reached into the pocket of her apron and pulled out the silver amulet. And she said, "Spare my farm, and you can have this." And as she handed it to Colonel Grigsby, all of the Union soldiers laughed. Did this little lady really think a small silver trinket was more valuable than a farm full of livestock? Colonel Grigsby looked at the amulet, and he read the priestly blessing from the book of Numbers. "The Lord bless thee and keep thee. The Lord make his face shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. The Lord lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace." And then he turned it over And when he did, his face turned ashen white. He carefully put it into the pocket of his uniform. He tipped his hat and said, "God bless you, ma'am." And he ordered the soldiers to leave. Later that night, by the firelight, Colonel Aaron Grigsby took the amulet from his pocket and read again the blessing of Aaron. "Maud, did that really happen?" asked Gertrude Shoemaker, as Gertrude and Maud were having lunch at Gower's Drugs in beautiful downtown Riverdale, that wonderful town where people care and life is usually fair. "Aunt Stella said it happened," Maud answered as she took another sip of her large glass of chocolate milk. "Well, then why haven't we heard that story before?" Gertrude wanted to know. "We haven't heard it either," Maud said, "until just recently, just the other day. Aunt Stella started talking about us and told us the story, but she said she's heard it ever since she was a little girl." "Maud, you know a story like that is a story you would have heard all of your life. And you know Stella's getting, I know, Maud said, she's getting forgetful. And we're worried about Aunt Stella, we really are, especially about her driving. Elmer said she doesn't need to drive. But Lord have mercy if we try to take her driving privileges away. Oh my, war's going to break out." "Well, whatever happened to this silver, what is it you called it?" "It's an amulet. I didn't know what one was either, but now Elmer says it's a good luck charm. But I looked it up. Oh, it's more than that. It's some kind of object that has power. And if you ask me, God's blessing has power. That's what an amulet is." "Well, whatever happened to the amulet?" Gertrude wanted to know. "Well, Stella doesn't know what happened to it." Gertrude laughed. "Maud, that sounds really good, but you know that story's not true." "Well, it may not be true," said Maud, "but it sure does make a good story." Dawn came over and refilled Gertrude's coffee and said, "Have you heard the forecast? They say that it's going to snow, over a foot. That's more snow than we've had since I was in school." After lunch, Elmer and Maud went over to Clark and Harvey to buy some groceries and to buy some for Aunt Stella. In fact, they got the last loaf of bread for Aunt Stella and, of course, some of that good old Clark and Harvey pimento cheese. They went over to Aunt Stella's house, and as they were unloading the groceries, Maud said, "Now, Aunt Stella, why don't you come out to the farm with us? If the power goes off, we have a fireplace, and you won't have anything to worry about." But as expected, Aunt Stella refused and said, "Oh, no, I'm fine right here. I have food to eat. I have a good book to read. I have everything that I need." And then Elmer sternly said, "Now, Aunt Stella, don't you even think about leaving this house. It's going to be too dangerous to go anywhere." "Elmer," she laughed, "why are you so worried about me? After all, where would I go?" Elmer and Maud went home. And it started snowing later that afternoon, and by early the next morning, over a foot of snow covered Riverdale. Even though they had power, Elmer built a big fire in the fireplace. Maud was making a pot of vegetable soup, and of course they had fresh bread and that Clark and Harvey pimento cheese. And they settled in for what they thought would be two or three peaceful days at home in front of the fire. "I sure hope Aunt Stella's okay," asked Maud. "Oh, she's fine," said Elmer. "We'll call later on." They called around lunchtime and didn't get an answer, but that wasn't unusual. Sometimes she didn't hear the phone, although most of the time they think she just refused to answer. But after repeated unanswered calls, they became very concerned. Late in the afternoon, Elmer called the police department and asked if someone could ride by and check on Aunt Stella. A few minutes later, he got a phone call. "Mr. Lawson, I hate to tell you, but I don't think anybody's in the house." What do you mean nobody's in the house? What about the car?" "Car's gone, sir, and it must have been gone from yesterday. There are no tracks in the drive. No lights are on in the house. Best we can determine, the house is empty." Well, Elmer knew the old green pickup truck couldn't make it into town, but he had a four-wheel drive Jeep. He and Maud got in the Jeep, and a journey that normally takes about 20 minutes took 2.5 hours. But when they finally arrived at Aunt Stella's, they went into the empty house, and Maud found a book. A book that Aunt Stella apparently had ordered that had first-person accounts of the Civil War from Indiana Union soldiers. And the book was marked to the account of Colonel Aaron Grigsby, who told about the encounter with the little lady and the shotgun in North Carolina. Aunt Stella quickly scanned the account. Maud quickly scanned the account. It was exactly as Aunt Stella had described, except there was no mention of a silver amulet. Maud, come here," Elmer said with panic in his voice. Maud went into the dining room, and open on the dining room table was one of those big road atlases, and it was open to the state of Indiana. Later that evening, a silver alert was issued for Stella Lawson, and it went out in North Carolina, Virginia, Tennessee, Kentucky, and Indiana. For the next 2 days, Elmer and Maud and all of Riverdale anxiously awaited to hear any news from Aunt Stella. And finally, late in the evening of the second day, a call came from the Indiana State Highway Patrol. They found Aunt Stella's car at the southbound rest stop on Interstate 65 outside of Clarksville, Indiana. Aunt Stella was nowhere to be found. Everyone started praying for Aunt Stella. The church sent out email prayer alerts. A prayer vigil was started. And when they gathered for worship on Sunday morning, they had a special time of prayer in the service for Aunt Stella. The minister's tone was somber. It was serious and concerned. And at the end of the service, when he was giving the last announcements and asking everyone to please continue to pray for Aunt Stella, they suddenly heard an air horn, and one of the ushers ran out and quickly ran back in and said, "Everybody, come quick. Our prayers have been answered." And they rushed out into the parking lot, and there was a big tractor trailer truck covered in road salt. It was Wild Bill. and Aunt Stella was in the cab blowing the air horn. She was. It was a happy reunion. People just couldn't believe that here she was after all of this time. And Elmer and Maude, after everything settled down, they got her back home. And they set her down, and Elmer said, "Aunt Stella, what in the world were you thinking?" Aunt Stella said, "Well, the first thing is, I was thinking, and you have been convinced that I could not." And then she told them the most remarkable story of how she had traced the descendants of Colonel Aaron Grigsby. And she finally made telephone contact with one of his great-great-great-grandsons. He knew about the story, but he didn't know anything about the details. And it was evident he had never heard of a silver amulet. As they were talking, he said, "There's really only one person in our family that would know those details, and that's my great aunt, Lily Grigsby. She's 103 years old, and she's in a nursing home in Scottsburg." But he said, "It might be too late, though. You see, she has dementia, and most of the time she won't even communicate with you." Stella told them that when she heard the snow was coming, she thought that would be a great time to make the journey because she knew Elmer couldn't follow her. And so she left as soon as Elmer and Maude had left the house, and she drove somewhere in Kentucky and she spent the night. And then the next day, she drove to the Hampton Oaks Nursing Facility in Scottsburg, Indiana, and she walked in the room of Miss Lily Grigsby. "Hello, my name is Stella Lawson. I'm the great-granddaughter of the little lady with the shotgun that Colonel Grigsby encountered in North Carolina." No response. "All of my life, I've heard that story. I've heard about how Colonel Grigsby saved the farm. And I wanted to talk to you about it." No response. "I think you probably know a little bit more than what he wrote in his book, because I always heard there was more." No response. Aunt Stella sat down in a chair. She waited a few minutes, and then she would ask another question. It was as if she was in the room by herself. Miss Grigsby didn't even acknowledge that she was there. This went on for a while, and then finally, Aunt Stella started thinking that this had been a bad idea. She started thinking about the reaction that Elmer and Maude would have when she got back home. She knew that she would get a tongue lashing from Elmer, and he probably would take away her driving privileges, which she probably deserved after pulling a stunt like this. But the hardest thing for her to accept was that apparently the story about the lady in white and the blessing and the ambulance had just been that. It had just been a story. It had just been a fairy tale. Just something they tell a little child. Obviously, it wasn't true. She stayed for a couple of hours. And then she knew she needed to go. So she stood up and she said to Miss Grigsby, "I'm going now. I wish we could have talked. I wish I could have talked to you a few years ago. God bless you." And she walked out of the room. She was walking down the hallway when she had a thought. She turned around went back into the room, stood in front of Miss Lily Grigsby and said, "The Lord bless thee and keep thee. The Lord make His face to shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. The Lord lift up His countenance upon thee and give thee peace." She turned, started out the door, when she heard a weak voice saying, "So you know." She came back, sat down on the bed beside Miss Grigsby and said, "Yes, I know. I've known since I was a little child. But you know, every time I tell the story, nobody believes me." Miss Grigsby said, "Colonel Grigsby was my grandfather. I never knew him. He was old when my father was born. But my father told me all about it, told me about the silver amulet. But you know, when I tried to tell people, they didn't believe me, so I quit talking about it." Aunt Stella said, "That's my problem. They think I'm crazy." Miss Grigsby started to roll her wheelchair over to a nightstand. She opened a drawer, reached way back in the back of the drawer, and pulled out a box. "Here," she said, "this belongs to you." Aunt Stella opened it. There was a silver amulet on which the words were inscribed, "The Lord bless thee and keep thee. The Lord make His face to shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. The Lord lift up His countenance upon thee and give thee peace." And she turned it over, and on the back, "The blessing of Aaron." She started home, and it started to snow. She didn't know if she could make it, so she pulled into a rest stop outside of Clarksville, Indiana, and she prayed that God would find a way to get her home safely. And she walked into the rest area, and there was Wild Bill. Maud said, "So, I suppose it was the amulet that saved you?" "No. No," she said, "it wasn't the amulet. It was the living Lord, who's always with us, and who looks after us, and who never leaves us, and never forsakes us." About that time, there was a knock at the door, and the minister showed up. And Maud said, "Aunt Stella, I want you to tell that story to the preacher and don't leave out a single word." So she did. She started all the way back at the beginning, and when she got to the silver amulet, the minister's expression changed. And Aunt Stella said, "So, you don't believe me either, do you?" The minister said, Oh no, I do believe you." And then he said, "You remember last year when I made that trip to Israel and went to the Holy Land? When we went to the archaeological museum in Jerusalem, we saw the oldest fragment of Holy Scripture that has ever been discovered. It goes back 2,600 years. It is a silver amulet. And on it the words are inscribed, 'The Lord bless thee and keep thee. The Lord make His face to shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. The Lord lift up His countenance upon thee and give thee peace.'" In Hebrew, of course. And Maud said, "So they must have known. They must have known about that in the Civil War." "No," the minister said. You see, they didn't discover the silver amulet until 1979. And that's the way things are in Riverdale, that wonderful town where people care and life is usually fair. Amen.